Okay, first, since it's been so long since we've sat together to listen and read Shastra, who remembers what book we were reading? Huh? Of? Yes, very good. Huh? Yes. And I was then. You got my second question right there. What canto? What pastime? What pastime is it? Everyone remembers that certainly. Prithumaraj. And what happened? Just in the. What did we hear in the last several classes about Prithumaraj? This Madhuri. And then. Yes. Good. Thank you. But then what happened after he instructed the citizens? Yes. Yes. They appreciated, accepted, the exalted citizen accepted his proposal that everyone should perform their duties and offer those duties to the Supreme Lord. And that this actually is the essence of Vanashrama. And if you remember, this was much of what the Lord had instructed Prithumaraj. Just at the beginning, when he came during the sacrifice with all the demigods, this was specifically what he instructed him. And then Prithumaraj replied with such affectionate desires for service. Who remembers there were two verses that really stood out. Oh, and there was also the part about Lakshmi Devi, that he was going to compete with Lakshmi Devi for service at the Lord's lotus feet. But what were the other verses that stood out? Yes.
1,000 ears.
Yes. Too many. So many ears. So that he could hear the Lord's glory spoken by pure devotees. This point that the Lord's glories should be spoken by pure devotees is a very important point. And when Prithumaraj had instructed his citizens, he instructed them, there was the first half or perhaps two-thirds of his instructions was this point about engaging in Vanashrama Dharma for Krishna's pleasure. Just perform one's prescribed duties to please Krishna. Yatta pravata bhutanam yena savamidam tatam. Krishna had said the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. O Lord, by this performance of duties, by the fruits of my work, please, we offer them to you. Please be pleased with them. There's bhakti in that, saturated in bhakti. But then, in the second part of the Lord's instructions, Lord Vishnu's instructions, does anyone remember what he said? Yes, Mataji. Serve the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. And there are some extraordinary texts in that where the Lord himself saying that he became glorious or famous and people are worshipping his lotus feet because of his dedication to the service of Brahmins and Vaishnavas. And then we also read that the Lord had not only said this to Prithumaraj, but in the third canto he had said the same thing to whom? The four Kumaras, yes. And this issue of, in fact, in those verses, the Lord, and more or less parallel in the verses, the text that he said to Prithumaraj, in the Lord of Vaikuntha said, so you can see that that's one interesting parallel. What's the difference between when it was spoken to Prithumaraj and when it was spoken to the four Kumaras? What's the same points? What's the basic difference? The persons were different he spoke to, but also the place was different. what was the difference in the place? Yes. So one was the material world, the other was the spiritual world, and yet this same principle, because he spoke it in the spiritual world, Lord Narayan did. So the same principle is it's not just something meant for us unadvanced souls in the material world, but it's a deep principle. And in fact, we've mentioned that the issue why King Vena was removed, nowadays the term would be there was a regime change. They instituted a regime change with King Vena. But why? Why did they do it? One reason we mentioned many times is that he was against sacrifice. But what else, from a somewhat of a different point of view? Yes. And he wouldn't listen to what the Brahmins said, the spiritually advanced souls, because this is the essence of the whole Varnashrama system, because those who rule tend to become implicated in the mode of passion. Not always, if they are real, true Rajarshis, Rajarishis. But there's a tendency, because of the nature of the occupation, to become passionate and attached to controlling, to money, to wealth, women, etc., power, control, like that. So that all takes birth from the mode of passion. So because of the tendency to become implicated in the mode of passion, there may be a tendency to use the citizens or the state for one's own pleasure as instruments for one's pleasure, as if one was in the center. So the Brahmin's position was to be aloof from that. They could not be on the employ or payroll of the administrators. Why? Because sometimes they had to correct them. And if you can't correct the person who's maintaining you, paying your salary, because you're on one side you're obliged to them, and on the other side you're dependent upon them, they may cut you off. So the Brahmins had to be aloof. And there was a famous story about the powerful politician Brahmin Chanakya Pandit, and how he was advising Chandragupta Maurya. And one time, and he was living outside of town in a cottage, in a hut, not accepting anything from him, but just giving him advice. And one time he offered some advice and the king declined to accept it. And Chandragupta and Chanakya Pandit basically said, "Okay, I'm leaving. You can find yourself another advisor." And perhaps there was also the intimation, "I'll find myself another king to advise, and you have to be quite afraid of that," because he knew his political abilities. And immediately, Chandragupta fell to the ground, begged him for forgiveness. "No, I'll follow what you said," because he was completely detached. He was living in a hut. There was another instance the Prabhupada told, I heard him tell, of some Brahmin who was completely poverty-stricken in Krishnanagar. And he was just teaching. He had nothing. He was just teaching, very extremely learned and fully self-satisfied. And there was a king. There was the king of Krishnanagara, was a Vaishnava. And he wanted to support this Brahmana who was so learned and so detached. So he came to the king, to the Brahmin, and offered his obeisances and said, "Is there anything I can do? Do you need anything? Whatever you need, I'll give you." And he said, "No, what do I need? You know, I have my students go out every day, they beg a little rice. I take the rice. There's a tree, a tamarind tree here. I take the leaves. I put the leaves in the rice. add a little salt. What do I need? I have my simple place to live. I have my learning. I have my teaching. I have something to eat. What do I need? Very independent. And therefore, one, he could give independent advice. So, Vena disrespected the entire system. And he said, what did he tell the Brahmins when they tried to advise him in ways that were actually for his good? What did he tell them? He said, you should perform the sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord. So they told him, so much good will come to you and your kingdom. And what did he tell them? Do you know? You are envious. Give up your childish, he said, but you should understand that I am the sum total of all the demigods. You perform your sacrifices to me. Give up your envy of me and worship me. So he tried to completely turn the system around. And the Brahmins, how did they respond? They killed him. Very powerful. And then Prithumaraj, they were instrumental in generating Prithumaraj from churning him from the thighs of dead Vena's body. An exalted soul entered that body. And now the king, first thing he did was start sacrifices. But also the instructions that he gave the citizens, what to perform sacrifices, but also the second half was how to respect the Brahmins. He was acting in that way. He was not autocratic and dictatorial. He respected the Brahmins. Even though he was an incarnation himself, he respected the Brahmins' position. And now he was going to get the opportunity to practice what he preached. Because four great, powerful Brahmins were just now coming. They just were going to appear. So that we shall hear. And their instructions are very wonderful. But before the instructions are given, we will hear Prithumaraj, or hear and see and learn of Prithumaraj's initial dealings with them. So this is the beginning of chapter 22. The great sage Maitreya said, while the citizens were thus praying to the most powerful king Prithu, the four Kumaras, who were as bright as the sun, arrived on that spot. What does it mean they were as bright as the sun? Fulgent, yes. What else?
Pure,
yes. Whenever the metaphor is given about light,
give knowledge.
Because darkness always indicates ignorance. Tamasima, Jyotigama. Go out of ignorance into the light. And Krishna Surya Sam, Maya Haya Andhaka. Maya is darkness. And knowledge of Krishna, or Krishna himself, is like the sun that dispels darkness. And they were so effulgent. Effulgent means pure. They had true charisma. The meaning of the word charisma is power, spiritual power. They possessed this because they had been Brahman realized, and then by the mercy of their journey to Vaikuntha, which we heard about in the last canto, they became lovers of the Lord. How? What was the significant event that changed them from Brahmavadis into devotees? Yes? the fragrance, the wind, the, not even directly the tulsi leaves, but the fragrance of the tulsi leaves carried by the wind. So it was even indirect. They didn't even have their noses to the Lord's lotus feet smelling the tulsi leaves or anything. But see how powerful that was, and it completely changed their heart. They began to experience ecstatic transformations of their body which they had never experienced before. And they were beyond any material transformations. They were fixed. So, they were exalted Vaishnavas. Seeing the glowing effulgence of the four Kumaras, the masters of all mystic powers, the king and his associates recognized them as they descended from the sky. In Prabhupada's purport, oh yes, we should know also, not this chapter or the previous chapter, but in chapter 20 in text 15. Could someone read that? Text 15? Go ahead, put your hand. Huh? Yes. Man defeats machine. Good.
If you continue to protect the citizens according to the instructions of the Lord and Brahmana.
Can you hear? If you continue to protect the citizens according to the instructions of
the learned Brahmanas
and authorities. Yeah, okay. But also, but you won't be able to say it loud enough so it gets recorded either, I believe.
As they are received by the disciplined succession.
As they are received by the disciplined succession.
By hearing from master to disciple.
If you continue doing these things, yes.
And if you follow the religious principles laid down by them, without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction, then every one of your citizens.
First blessing. Every one of your citizens will be happy and love you if you follow the principles that I've stated. And second.
And very soon you'll be able to see such already liberated personalities as the four Kumaras.
So his seeing, or the four Kumaras coming to him, was direct blessing of Lord Vishnu. And this is true. This is how one... We want the blessings of the Lord, but this association with exalted personalities like the four Kumaras, this is the prime blessing of the Lord. Now, we have some questions about that to put to you, but let's continue here. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So this was predicted by the Lord, and by his blessings we can say it's happening. From Prabhupada's purport, about a third of the way down. These four Kumaras, as Siddheshwaras, had achieved all the yogic perfectional achievements, and as such they could travel in outer space without machines. While they were coming to Maharaj Prithu from other planets, they did not come by airplane. Was that one interview when Prabhupada... Someone had... The reporter had read something that Prabhupada had written in the Bhagavatam about different ways to travel. And one of them, you can travel by hooking up pigeons, magic carpets. This is somewhere in Prabhupada's books this is written, maybe even in the fourth canto. You know where it is? But anyway, so the reporter asked Prabhupada, if one can travel by magic carpet, why did you come in an aeroplane? And Prabhupada's reply, and he was so charming, and he could. And his reply was, to be one with you. It was so. And then he would smile in this way that was so really charismatic and powerful that he charmed the reporters, and that, you know, they just laughed and accepted it. So, in other words, these four Kumaras were also spacemen who could travel in space without machines. The residents of the planet known as Siddhaloka can travel in outer space from one planet to another without vehicles. However, the special power of the Kumaras mentioned herewith is that whatever place they went, so to be able to travel from place to place is wonderful in one sense, but that was not the specific and glorious ability, most specifically the glorious ability of the Kumaras. Their glorious ability was whatever place they went to would immediately become sinless. Sinless means pure. Pure, free from sin. Misery is caused by sin. Like when the sage Narada Muni came in the presence of Mrigari the hunter, Mrigaadi means the enemy of the animals. He was half killing animals, causing them so much pain, such a cruel, hard-hearted person. He would enjoy watching them flap around, writhing in pain. This was the nature of this Mrigadi. And then Narada Muni set the animals free. Mrigari was angry, and Narada Muni stepped before him. And this cruel hunter was unable to think a bad thought in his presence. And he immediately started offering Narada Muni gifts according to his capacity. Please come to my house, I'll give you so many nice skins of animals. He offered as if Narada Muni, that's what he was interested in. But it was he was sincere, his offering. And then he benedicted him in a very wonderful way, Narada did. So during the reign of Maharaj Prithu, everything on the surface of this globe was sinless. And therefore, the Kumaras decided to see the king. Ordinarily, they do not go to any planet which is sinful. 3. Seeing the four Kumaras, Prithu Maharaj was greatly anxious to receive them. Remember, he had been instructed by the Lord himself about the importance of Brahmins and Vaishnavas. So here were extremely powerful Brahmin Vaishnavas. Therefore the king, with all of his officers, very hastily got up, as anxious as a conditioned soul whose senses are immediately attracted by the modes of material nature. So this is to give us contaminated souls an idea of what it was like for Prithu Maharaj when he saw the Kumaras coming. The analogy is given. Just like when there is some sense object present that one has a taste for, one's mind becomes spontaneously attracted and then one's body immediately follows and then makes its attempt to get that sense object. Why does this happen? It is the power. One is impelled by the three modes of material nature. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani sarvasha. All things in this world are going on by that power. The modes are that powerful. Baladivana yojitaha. They are so powerful, they impel one to do things even against one's will. This is the power of the three modes of material nature. You don't want to do something, it doesn't make any difference. The modes will whip you. Passion, ignorance will whip you, force you, if one has those modes. So just as the modes force one to be attracted by sense objects, similarly, Prithu Maharaj was attracted by those saintly persons because he had developed a particular character, a particular taste. He was attracted to saintliness. Prabhupada will say this in his purport about just a couple of sentences down. Here, Prithu Maharaj is compared to such a conditioned soul, not because he was a conditioned soul, but because he was so anxious to receive the Kumaras that if without, it was like, that it was as if without them he would have lost his life. The conditioned soul is attracted by the objects of sense gratification. His eyes are attracted to see beautiful things. His ears are attracted to hear nice music. Impelled, forced. His nose is attracted to enjoy the aroma of a nice flower. His tongue is attracted to taste nice food. Similarly, all his other senses, his hands, his legs, his belly, his genitals, his mind, are so susceptible to the attraction of the objects of enjoyment that he cannot restrain himself. And the entire advertising industry is meant to use this principle, dayato vishaya punsan sangas tesho vijayate, to get one to meditate on the objects of the senses, to get you to separate yourself from your money and go and let it go from your pocket into my pocket. That is the whole advertising industry exploiting this tendency. So materialistic persons are so attracted to the objects of enjoyment that he cannot restrain himself. Prithu Maharaj, in the same way, could not restrain himself from receiving the four Kumaras who were bright by dint of their spiritual progress. And thus, not only he himself, but all his officers and associates all received the four Kumaras. It is said, birds of a feather flock together. In this world, everyone is attracted by a person of the same category. A drunkard is attracted to persons who are also drunkards. Similarly, a saintly person is attracted by other saintly persons. Prithu Maharaj was in the topmost position of spiritual advancement, and as such, he was attracted by the Kumaras who were of the same category. It is said, therefore, that a man is known by his company. What comes to your mind as soon as you hear that? Okay. What comes to someone else's mind? That's easier sometimes, because no one tends to want to admit what's, especially in a public forum. Yes, Saros, yes. But it's easy to know what modes of material nature attract one by this principle. Who is one actually attracted to? What is one? There's also other methodologies of knowing described in the Bhagavad Gita. What chapters discuss the modes of material nature? 14? Yes, 14, 17, 18. Text 4. So he was so attracted to them. When the great sages accepted their receptions, perhaps the two examples that come to my mind of just the opposite, Haridas Thakur, the devotees were attracted to him, and non-devotees, members of other religions, wanted to kill him, some of them. And of course, Jesus, and as Prabhupada pointed out, that Jesus, one of Jesus' commandments that he was following and explaining was, thou shalt not kill. And the first thing they did was kill him. They wanted to kill him because envy. And their realm was of this world. His realm was of the spiritual world. He was giving them, instructing them, and that was intolerable. They immediately wanted to kill him. Your riches are not here of this world. Don't try to gain riches of this world. So the sages, so Prithu Maharaj came forward. When the sages accepted their reception according to the instructions of the Shastras and finally took their seats offered by the king, influenced by the glories of the sages, immediately bowed down spontaneously. Thus he worshipped the four Kumaras, these great acharyas of their own sampradaya. What is the name of their sampradaya? What is it? Excuse me? Okay, yes. And what is it known as? Excuse me? Nimbarka Sampradaya, Nimbarka Muni. After this, the king took the water which had washed the lotus feet of the four Kumaras and sprinkled it over his hair. By such respectful actions, the king, as an exemplary personality, showed how to receive a spiritually advanced person. So therefore we said that he heard, he preached, and he followed. The four great sages were elder to Lord Shiva. In what way are they known as being elder to Lord Shiva? Why are they known as being elder to Lord Shiva? Do you know? Yes, they were the firstborns of Lord Brahma. And then Lord Shiva took their birth in some sense by the mercy of the four Kumaras. Why? No, they didn't want to get involved in the beginning progeny business. Important as it was, they were so realized. And Lord Brahma became angry, and from that anger was born Rudra. The four great sages were elder to Lord Shiva, and when they were seated on the golden throne, they appeared just like fire blazing on an altar. Maharaj Prithu, out of his great gentleness and respect for them, began to speak with great restraint as follows. So text 7 through 16, those 10 texts describe or they relate the words of Maharaj Prithu to the four Kumaras. My dear great sages, auspiciousness personified, Mangalam Mangalayana, personified good fortune. Very, very interesting. They personify auspiciousness. That question, the discussion about how they do that and why they do that, I'd like to leave to a little bit later. And if I somehow forget it, someone please remind me. But it should come up, Krishna willing. Because the Bhagavatam is such that each word has very, very deep meaning. So we can read, oh, they personify auspiciousness, mangalam, mangalayanam. Okay, and then you just go on to the next thing. But you can mine that, just like if one goes into a diamond mine, one could come out with a valuable jewel. So we really want to mine or go into the Bhagavatam and points that intrigue us, points that disturb us, somewhere where there's energy for us. We should look deeply. So there, just as I was reading it even, I noticed this term, this auspiciousness personified. So that we'll talk about that, Krishna willing, a bit later. So he began to speak. He said, my dear great sages, auspiciousness personified, it is very difficult for even the mystic yogis to see you. Indeed. So what does it mean? What is he saying when he says it's difficult to see you? He explains that in the next sentence. For indeed you are rarely seen. I do not know what kind of pious activity I perform for you to grace me by appearing before me without difficulty, without endeavor. They came to him. I do not know what pious activities I perform to have this great fortune which is rarely achieved. Prithu Maharaj is saying, I do not know, but we know what he did to get it. We just heard it in text 15. Of the 20th chapter. What was it? He what? Excuse me? He served the Brahmins. He followed the instructions. He engaged because the Lord had told him to do specific things, and he summarized all those things in that 15th text. Engage your citizens. Read the text again, but loudly and quickly. Our brother Bihari. Loudly, maybe if you don't speak into the pillar, it might reach here.
My dear King Pito, if you continue to protect the citizens.
Protect the citizens, yes.
According to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities.
Follow the Brahmins, this Vanashrama system.
As they are received by the disciplined succession, by Girdan, from master to disciple, and follow.
Treat them as your spiritual masters.
And if you follow the religious principles laid down by them.
Follow what they say.
Without attachment to ideas manufactured by them from compassion, then every one of your citizens will be happy and will love you, and very soon you will be able to see such already liberated personalities as the world.
So he did his duty. As the Lord had instructed, according to his position as king, in a wonderful way, and by the Lord's blessing, he had seen now the four. Without him even making any endeavor, they came to him. So Prabhupada, in his purport, about two-thirds of the way down the purport to seven, although Maharaj Prithu's life was full of pious activities, he was wondering how his audience with the Kumaras happened. He could not imagine what kind of pious activities he had performed. So that was a way of glorifying the fortune he was receiving. Nothing I could do could bring such a wonderful result as seeing you. So his appreciation, based on his knowledge of who these great personalities were, was being expressed through his mouth, his realization. This is a sign of humility on the part of King Prithu, whose life was so full of pious activities that even Lord Vishnu came to see him and predicted the four Kumaras would also come. He continues, text 8, any person upon whom the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are pleased can achieve anything which is very rare to obtain in this world as well as after death. Not only that, but one also receives the favor of the auspicious Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, who accompany the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Just see. He's saying that the Lord, there are hints here that these, the greatest of all personalities, Lord Shiva, and the greatest of the greatest, Lord Vishnu, they accompany the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. So that will also integrate into, that explains why they're mangala mangalayanam. Look what they carry with them. Prabhupada's purport. Any person upon whom the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are the bearers of Lord Vishnu, the all auspicious. There is the answer there. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Velochanena Shanta Sadaiva Rideshu Velokayanti Yam Shama Sundarama Chintaguna Sarupam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Vajami. The devotees, out of their extreme love for Govinda, what word sticks out there? Extreme love, devotees. The Supreme Personality of Godhead always carry the Lord within their heart. Because of their extreme love, they always carry the Lord within their heart. Without extreme love, the Lord will not sit in one's heart. What does extreme mean in this sense? Remarkable, very great. Intense, single-pointed, there is love, a lot of love, too much love, extreme love is on the extreme end of the scale to an extremely high degree. The Lord is already in the heart of everyone, but the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins actually perceive and see him always in ecstasy. Therefore, Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are carriers of Lord Vishnu. Wherever they go, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, or the devotees of Lord Vishnu are all carried. Excuse me. Wherever they go, the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, they are carried. The four Kumaras are Brahmins, and they visited the place of Maharaj Prithu. Naturally, Lord Vishnu and his devotees were also present. Under the circumstances, the conclusion is that when the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are pleased with a person, Lord Vishnu is also pleased. Now, where do we know that point from? This is confirmed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his 8 stanzas on the spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. By pleasing the spiritual master who is both Brahman and Vaishnava, one pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased, then one has nothing more to achieve, either in this world or after death. 9. Prithu Maharaj continued, although you are traveling in all planetary systems, this is his words to the four Kumaras, people cannot know you, as they cannot know the Supersoul, even though he is within everyone's heart as the witness of everything. He is there, but people do not know of him, despite the fact he is there. So therefore, the comparison is made that the four Kumaras, people may see you, people may superficially, you may be there, but people don't know who you really are and what your potency actually is. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot understand the Supersoul. About halfway down Prabhupada's purport in text 9. When Sanatana Goswami went to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he could not be recognized by Chandrasekhar Acharya. The conclusion is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart, and his pure devotees, the Vaishnavas, are also traveling all over the world. But those who are under the modes of nature cannot understand the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of this cosmic manifestation, or the Vaishnavas. It is said, therefore, that one cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead or a Vaishnava with these material eyes. One has to purify his senses and engage in the service of the Lord. Then gradually one can realize who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who is a Vaishnava. 10. A person who is not very rich and is attached to family life becomes highly glorified. So one could say a person who is rich, very, 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 very rich, if a person with $10 billion, it's so amazing how rich wealth brings fame, because if we think of who's the richest person in the world, who is the richest person in the world? Everyone will probably say Bill Gates. So if he walked in here right now, what would we do? We would stop the class, we would offer him a seat, we wouldn't do RT or anything like that, and we would treat him so nicely. I understood, there's a very interesting parallel in this. This is why the residents of Vrindavan, even though Krishna is so wealthy and so powerful, the all-powerful, the all-wealthy, all-everything, why they cannot be aware of his Aishwarya, Aishwarya Gyan, because it will hurt their love for him. Now, just imagine our Bill Gates or some extremely wealthy person walked in. We would be so nice to him, we'd all be smiling and like that. But what would every one of us be thinking? Yes. And that is not love. So even if you have many, many, many friends perhaps that you grew up with, and they were just like you, used to play this with them, used to wrestle with them, and then if one of them becomes Bill Gates and you're dealing with him, Sometimes you maybe just be talking about, remember the old days, remember your friendship, and then you'd be thinking of him like that. But as soon as you remember his Aishwarya, his wealth, even though you have your love for him and your friendship with him, has nothing to do with wealth, but as soon as you remember his wealth, you'll start naturally thinking, how can I get some money from him? And then the love is gone, right out the door, right out the window. So the residents of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna is so powerful that any time some of this Aishwarya Gyan comes to the surface of their consciousness, it will, because it will impede, get in the way of the intensity of their love for Krishna, it immediately, by the madhurya, the sweetness, it gets pushed below the surface. So a person who is wealthy, he gains immediately. He's respected and everyone admires him. And if someone is very, very detached from this world, renounced, it's an opulence and everyone admires him. But a person who is neither rich nor attached to his family, who are attached to their family, they don't have those two opulences of Aishwarya and renunciation. So they are not glorified. They're common. But even a person who is not rich and is attached to family becomes highly glorified when saintly persons are present in his home. The master and servants who are engaged in offering the exalted visitors water, a sitting place, and paraphernalia for reception are glorified, and the home itself is also glorified. So this is a way of explaining the glories of the Lord, because you have, just like a wealth, you have to be wealthy to make another person wealthy. You have to be glorious to make another person glorious. So if just by serving, inviting such a person into your house, so he says, look how he's glorifying the four Kumaras in such a wonderful way. And not only you inviting him to your house, your servants who are just there because they're your servants and they're just doing service because they're serving you. The servants of your... In other words, you become the servant of an exalted person and then someone is serving you and they are servant of an exalted person and they too become glorious. Just like there was one servant girl in the house of Srivas Thakur who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would sometimes bathe, go to the Ganga to bathe, and sometimes he would bathe in the place where he was in Srivas Thakur's house. And there was one servant girl whose name was, anyone know her name? Dukhi, was unhappy. She was engaged in bringing water from the Ganga for the devotees to bathe, and she would bring so many pots of water and line them up very neatly for the devotees to bathe, and sometimes she would see the ecstatic form of Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu so much appreciated her piety, her purity in doing this, that he benedicted her and changed her name to Sukhi from Dukhi. So even, and Mahaprabhu said, even the servants in your house, Srivas Thakur, they are dear to me. And who did he say? Even a dog, was that about Srivas Thakur? Even a dog in your house is dear to me. So this is why Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Vaishnava Thakur, Tomar Kukur, I am just being satisfied being your dog. So when this happens, saintly persons are quite ready to visit the house of a poor man or a man who is attached to family life. When this happens, the owner of the house and his servants are glorified because they offer water for washing the feet of a saintly person, sitting places and other things to receive him. The conclusion is that if a saintly person goes to the house of even an unimportant man, Such a person becomes glorious by his blessings. It is therefore the Vedic system that a householder invite a saintly person in his home to receive his blessings. This system is still current in India, and therefore saintly persons, wherever they go, are hosted by the householders, who in turn get an opportunity to receive transcendental knowledge. It is the duty of a sannyasi, therefore, to travel everywhere just to favor the householders, who are generally ignorant of the values of spiritual life. Why is it said that householders are generally ignorant of the values of spiritual life? Why is that statement so often made? So we ask a brahmachari who can accuse, or a householder who can be humble. Which should we do? Maybe humble householder.
Yes.
He's, Prabhu said there tend to be more grihamedis than grihastas. Yes. You could tell someone who, yes, to remain inexperienced in these things. That's good. It's my blessing. But I'm very experienced. I can tell you why. It's because there's such a tendency, first of all, basically for sensual enjoyment. And then you have to make all the money. And then you have to associate with non-devotees to make the money. And no matter how much money you have, it's never enough. You need more and more money. And there's such a tendency to not have any time because of the money and the needs of the family and the needs of the wife, the needs of the children, or the needs of the husband. On and on and on. There are these tendencies are so dominant. So dominant. The sense enjoyment, tendency towards sense enjoyment And then the tendency to require the money which is required, because if you don't have money, you're in trouble in householder life. Especially, you can live sort of simply in India with just a little bit of money, but in the West, you need so much money just to survive. So difficult. So difficult. Husband, wife, in debt. You have to work, and to work for someone, have a job. Oh, to work for someone. And you have to socialize with all these people, and it's so much petty office gossip goes on, and they like you, and they don't like this one, and they'll gang up on you, and they want you to socialize, and they want to go out, and they want to do this. They're so contaminating. It's like when the politicians now, when they want votes, they talk about we'll create so many jobs. But this whole concept of job, this 9-to-5 job that separates you from the family, that makes you dependent on some foolish person who happens to be the one in charge of paying your salary, and you have to be nice to him and everything. This whole thing is contaminating. This whole society is contaminating. It turns you into a begging dog. Give me a job. Like the dog comes out for his chapatis. And they have to roll over so the master will feed them. So similarly, they have to roll over for the material world. Yes? It's true? So contaminating, and no time. And when you get home from 9 hours of work, say if you're strong enough to have chanted japa, if it's 8 hours of work, then there's a traveling to the job, and then you've been kept compressed in a box for all day long, can't do anything you want, and then finally you're out at the end and you feel so relieved, and then you're exhausted. And that's what the life is going to be. By the time you're free from your work, working and family responsibilities, exhausted. Stay free. So So the householders tend to become absorbed in that way, and then a saintly person enters their house and they can change the atmosphere and remind them what life's purpose actually is. Even though perhaps they can't change anything from the practical way they run their life because they're already so deeply immersed, it's so hard to get out. Maybe they can't even change anything, but at least for some time, some lament enters their heart. Oh, I wish I could be a devotee. And that wish, or act more like a devotee, or have time to chant more and do service, that enters the heart. And therefore, that desire is there, and Krishna reciprocates with the desires of the living entity. Oh, you want an opportunity to do service? Then he arranges it. So that's the grihastha that allows holy persons to come, and then the other. On the contrary, even though full of all opulence and material prosperity, any householder's house where the devotees of the Lord are never allowed to come in, this is on the opposite, and where there is no water for washing their feet, is to be considered a tree in which all venomous serpents live. Maharaj Prithu offered his welcome to the four Kumaras, addressing them as the best of brahmanas. He welcomed them, saying, "From the beginning of your birth, you strictly observe the vows of celibacy. And although you are experienced in the path of liberation, you are keeping yourselves just like small children." Prithu Maharaj inquired from the sages about persons entangled in this dangerous material existence because of their previous actions. So this is getting closer to the point that, or one of the points I wish to bring out, but we won't quite bring it out yet. But he inquired from them. He sat them down, glorified them, not flattered them, but glorified them for what they actually were. And then, after welcoming them and making sure they were comfortable, where in the Bhagavatam are there examples of greeting personalities? Vajrihari Pool. Vidura comes to Hastinapur. One example. Yes. Yes. That's two separate examples. Yes. Both. Did you? Which one were you thinking of? Both, but because they came it separately. Yes. In a very simple way. Yes. Yes, Angira and Nara. Anyone else? Yes. Krishna enters Mathura, leaves Mathura. Where is that described? Oh, yes, I'm sorry, yes. When Krishna enters Mathura, he goes to so many houses. He goes to the house of Sudama. Also, when Krishna goes to Hastinapur, goes into Vidura's house. So Prithu Maharaj inquired from the sages, how could persons entangled in this dangerous material existence, why is someone entangled? Because of his previous actions, his karma. How could such persons, whose only aim is sense gratification, be blessed with any good fortune? The second half of Prabhupada's purport. Grihastha life is inauspicious because grihastha means consciousness for sense gratification. And as soon as there is sense gratification, one's position is always full of dangers. This material world is said to be padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Everyone in this material world is struggling hard for sense gratification. And clearing all these points, Maharaj Prithu inquired from the four Kumaras about the fallen conditioned souls who are rotting in this material world due to their past bad or inauspicious activities. Is there any possibility for their auspicious spiritual life? What a compassionate question. If someone asked you that question, what would you answer them? Serve the Lord with those, in other words, place Him as the center of your house. So a householder should worship the deity. Householders worship at the deity means He is the master of the house, not me. He is the enjoyer of the house, not me. Once in the New Govardhan farm in Mawilambar, I went to one Mataji's house. Her name is Sharanya. And in her living room, she had three, and it wasn't a huge house or anything, but she had three huge deities of Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. It was quite incredible. They were huge. And they were clearly, and you know, she would offer them food three times. They were clearly the predominators of the house. Their presence was so powerful. It was wonderful. What else would you tell? Mahaprabhu told householders when he was spreading the Krishna consciousness in Navadvipa, he told them, you gather together with your family and clap your hands and chant Hare Krishna. This material world is said to be padam padam yad vipadam natesham, dangerous at every step because everyone in the material world is struggling hard for sense gratification. Clearing all these points, Maharaj Prithu inquired from the four Kumaras about the fallen conditioned souls who are rotting in this material world due to their past bad or inauspicious deeds. Is there any possibility for their auspicious spiritual life? At the end of Canto 5, Prikshit Maharaj, after hearing about the hells that people are suffering in, he's going to ask the question, is there any way that these suffering people can be delivered? And we'll wait till then before we hear his answer. Is there any possibility for their auspicious spiritual life? In this verse, the words indriyato vedinam is very significant. It indicates persons whose only aim is to satisfy the senses. And also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said, when the Brahmana told him, I cannot stay, Visha Taranga, I cannot stay in this material world anymore in South India. I want to leave my family. Mahaprabhu told him, Stane Stita Sutagatam Tanavan Manobhya. You stay in your place because superficial changes give superficial results, but become deep by hearing about Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam. And the last few lines. One becomes fallen by dint of his own bad, past bad activities. Everyone is responsible for his fallen condition because of his own activities. When activities are changed to devotional service, one's auspicious life begins. My dear sirs, Prithu Maharaj said, there is no need to ask about your good and bad fortune. So there's no need to ask, how are you? How are you feeling? How's your health? How's this? How are you? Because you are always absorbed in spiritual bliss. The mental concoction of the auspicious and inauspicious does not exist in you. Because this is such consciousness. We can just read that as if it's just some magical state and not understand at all what it means. What does it mean that when you're absorbed in spiritual bliss, the concepts of material, especially subasub, they don't exist for you? Maybe that will also come up. I am completely assured that personalities like you are the only friends for persons who are in the blazing fire of material existence. I therefore ask you how in this material world we can very soon achieve the ultimate goal of life. The end of Prabhupada's purport. One can get rid of all these material pains only when he takes shelter of the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. What words strike you in that sentence? Take shelter, that's the words of the chanting. Is there a difference between chanting and taking shelter of the chanting? There sure is. Namasraya kore japanatum tumi. This is the recommendation, that we actually take shelter of Krishna and his holy names. This is also explained by Narottama Das Thakur, Golokera Premadana Hari Nama Sankirtan Rati Na Janmilo Kene Thai. Narottama Das Thakur regretted that he did not pursue his attraction for the transcendental vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. The conclusion is that all persons in this material world are suffering from material pains, and if one wants to get rid of them, he must associate with saintly persons, pure devotees of the Lord, and chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
That is the only auspicious way for materialistic persons. And the final verse that we'll read in this section. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always anxious to elevate the living entities. That is very reassuring, isn't it? Who are his parts and parcels, naturally he's anxious. Aham bija pita, aham bija pada pita. And for their special benefit, the Lord travels all over the world in the form of self-realized persons like you. We'll read one. Yes, I'll read the second half of Prabhupada's purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed by the Lord that there are many devotees. But a devotee who is fully conversant in the Vedic conclusion is very dear to him. Everyone is trying to elevate himself to the highest position according to his mentality. Isn't that true? The karmis who have a bodily concept of life try to enjoy sense gratification to the utmost. The jnani's idea of the highest position is merging into the effulgence of the Lord. But a devotee's highest position is in preaching all over the world the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the devotees are actually the representatives of the Supreme Lord, and as such, they travel all over the world, directly as Narayan, because they carry Narayan within their hearts and preach his glories. The representative of Narayan is as good as Narayan, but he is not to conclude, like the Mayavadis, that he has become Narayan. Generally, a sannyasi is addressed as Narayan by the Mayavadis. Their idea is that simply by taking sannyas, one becomes equal to Narayan or becomes Narayan himself. Has anyone seen that in Vrindavan or Benares or somewhere? Namo Narayan. They say that. Benares? The Vaishnava conclusion is different, as stated by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Saksha dari tvena samasta sastrai uktastatam tam bhava eva sadvi kintu prabhuya prievatasya vande guru shri charanaravindam. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, a devotee is as good as Narayan, not by becoming Narayan, but by becoming the most confidential servant of Narayan. Such great personalities act as spiritual masters for the benefit of the people in general, and as such, a spiritual master who is preaching the glories of Narayan should be accepted as Narayan and be given all respects due to him. So the four Kumaras are about to reply. Now, the question that I wanted to ask in this, I spoke too much. Why, in the culture, in the Vedic culture, one of the verses that we read, and this makes a little fun of it in one sense, that it says that the Lord says that if I prefer the food offered to me, cooked in ghee, I prefer it more when it's not given to the fire, but given into the mouths of the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. This was to the four Kumaras. So one might, part of one might think, well, I can imagine who wrote this book. The people who want to get fed. There's obviously some motivation in there. Everyone should worship, give donations and feed the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Like that, if the person who says that, if he's a Brahmin or a so-called Vaishnava, you think, well, is there any personal motivation in there? So is this some kind of cultural phenomenon? Oh, the Vedic culture, they respect the Brahmins. In our Western culture, we respect the wealthy, the influential. No one's going to mention the sports heroes, or, you know, people like that. But there's respect given to those who accomplish and things like that. So there, it's, you know, this is something of some bygone era, you know, that the Brahmins are respected. But obviously, we don't accept that. What is it that makes the Brahmins and Vaishnavas respected? What is the part of the culture? It's been said many times. But what is, it's just emphasized that they are respected, but why are they respected? Why does the culture respect them? The culture is respect, the cultural respect is automatic, which is very helpful if there is quality and substance on the other end. So therefore, Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur rejected the superficial part of this. Yes, in the culture, it's respect. There's respect given to the Brahmins, but the Brahmins also have a responsibility in it, and that is to be qualified. Then it works perfectly. Otherwise, the money is given to the bank teller, and the bank teller has no connection with the bank, and you've just lost it. It's worthless. So there has to be a connection between the Brahmins and the absolute truth. Then it works perfectly. And when it works most perfectly, and the same point about the spiritual master. So there has to be respect given to the spiritual master, but when it works the most perfectly, that's the matter of culture, that's the matter of the system works, there's nothing works without that. But when it works most perfectly is when the spiritual master, this is just an example, or the Brahmin or the Vaishnava, is like, and I've read this before, is of the quality that that Lord Narayan explains when Durvasa Muni comes to him in terror because the Lord's chakra is chasing him, trying to kill him for offending Ambarish Maharaj. So he's asking the shelter of Lord Narayan because the chakra is under the control of Lord Narayan. So he says, please, please save me from this chakra, and here is Lord Narayan's response. Aham bhakta paradhino yasva tantra iva duja. That I am dependent on my bhaktas, on my devotees. He, Aswatantra. Swatantra means independent. I am not independent in any way. Certainly you should understand this. I am dependent on them. I am not independent. Sadubhya grasta ridayo. My heart is controlled by these persons who are free from all material desires. Bhakta bhakta janapriya. And not only am I so dependent on them, and they so dear to me, but even the devotees of my devotees are dear to me. O best of the Brahmins, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulence. Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of their heart, bring me under their full control. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems? The pure devotees, sadavo ridayam mayam sadunam ridayam tvaham. So this verse thought specifically answers the question of why the four kumaras, why the devotees are so much desired to be brought into people's houses. Why are they mangalam, mangalayanam? And Prabhupada said this in his purports. He answered this point already. This verse explains it. Ma anya te na janati nayam tebyo managapi. The pure devotee is always in the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of my pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. In other words, when the devotee comes, and Prabhupada said this, this means the Lord is coming, Krishna is coming. Because he's carrying him. And this is the purpose of the culture. The devotee is there, he sits down, you make him feel comfortable, you treat him with respect, and you hope that what it is in his heart, which is Krishna, which is his, Krishna's Kripa Shakti, will come out his mouth in his words. And you want those words to enter your heart through your ear, out of his heart, through his mouth, and into your heart, through your ear. This is the essence of the process. So will we become that kind of devotee, as described by the Lord himself, the Lord of Vaikuntha himself? This should be our desire. And by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, spiritual master, this can be our achievement. And what else, even though it's so hard to do for a conditioned soul, what else is worthy of striving for in this murky material world? So, for your information, I read up to in Canto 9, Chapter 4, from 63 to 68. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kichu Maharaj ki jai, Four Kumaras ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.